our speed when our leg muscles are cut, but infirmity takes the place of speed. But no such danger is involved in the case of the goods to which we referred a moment ago. And why, if I have lost a good friend, I have no false friend whom I must endure in his place, nor, if I have buried a dutiful son, must I face in exchange unfilial conduct. In the second place, this does not mean to me the taking off of a friend or of a child. It is the mere taking off of their bodies. But a good can be lost in only one way, by changing into what is bad. And this is impossible, according to the law of nature, because every virtue and every work of virtue abides uncorrupted. Again, even if friends have perished, or children of approved goodness who fulfill their father's prayers for them, there is something that can fill their place. Do you ask what this is? It is that which had made them good in the first place, namely virtue. Virtue suffers no space in us to be unoccupied. It takes possession of the whole soul and removes all sense of loss. It alone is sufficient, for the strength and beginnings of all goods exist in virtue herself. What does it matter if running water is cut off and flows away, as long as the fountain from which it has flowed is unharmed? You will not maintain that a man's life is more just if his children are unharmed than if they have passed away, nor yet better appointed, nor more intelligent, nor more honorable, therefore no better either. The addition of friends does not make one wiser, nor does their taking away make one more foolish, therefore not happier or more wretched either. As long as your virtue is unharmed, you will not feel the loss of anything that has been withdrawn from you. You may say, come now, is not a man happier when girt about with a large company of friends and children? Why should this be so? For the supreme good is neither impaired nor increased thereby. It abides within its own limits, no matter how fortune has conducted herself. Whether a long old age falls to one's lot, or whether the end comes on this side of old age, the measure of the supreme good is unvaried, in spite of the difference in years. Whether you draw a larger or a smaller circle, its size affects its area, not its shape. One circle may remain as it is for a long time, while you may contract the other forthwith, or even merge it completely with the sand in which it was drawn. Yet each circle has had the same shape. That which is straight is not judged by its size, or by its number, or by its duration. It can no more be made longer than it can be made shorter. Scale down the honorable life as much as you like, from the full 100 years, and reduce it to a single day. It is equally honorable. Sometimes virtue is widespread, governing kingdoms, cities, and provinces, creating laws, developing friendships, and regulating the duties that hold good between relatives and children. At other times, it is limited by the narrow bounds of poverty, exile, or bereavement. But it is no smaller when it is reduced from prouder heights to a private station, from a royal palace to a humble dwelling, or when from a general and broad jurisdiction it is gathered into the narrow limits of a private house or a tiny corner. Virtue is just as great, even when it has retreated within itself and is shut in on all sides. for its spirit is no less great and upright, its sagacity no less complete, its justice no less inflexible. It is, therefore, equally happy. For happiness has its abode in one place only, namely, in the mind itself, and is noble, steadfast, and calm. And this state cannot be attained without a knowledge of things divine and human. The other answer, which I promise to make to your objection, follows from this reasoning. The wise man is not distressed by the loss of children or of friends, for he endures their death in the same spirit in which he awaits his own, and he fears the one as little as he grieves for the other. For the underlying principle of virtue is conformity. All the works of virtue are in harmony and agreement with virtue itself. But this harmony is lost if the soul, which ought to be uplifted, is cast down by grief or a sense of loss. It is ever a dishonor for a man to be troubled and fretted, to be numbed when there is any call for activity. For that which is honorable is free from care and untrammeled, is unafraid, and stands girt for action. What, you ask, will the wise man experience no emotion like disturbance of spirit? Will not his features change color, his countenance be agitated, and his limbs grow cold? And there are other things which we do, not under the influence of the will, but unconsciously, and as the result of a sort of natural impulse. I admit that this is true, but the sage will retain the firm belief that none of these things is evil, or important enough to make a healthy mind break down. Whatever shall remain to be done, virtue can do with courage and readiness. For anyone would admit that it is a mark of folly to do in a slothful and rebellious spirit whatever one has to do, or to direct the body in one direction and the mind in another, and thus to be torn between utterly conflicting emotions. For folly is despised precisely because of the things for which she vaunts and admires herself, and she does not do gladly even those things in which she prides herself.